Well, it's been 5 weeks since we last read in the book of Daniel, the prophecy, a great book, one of the two primary and certainly deep prophetic books of the Bible. There's two, one in the Old Testament and one in the New. There's other prophecies in the Old Testament and there's other prophecies in the New Testament. But the book of Daniel in the Old Testament is the second half of the book, an absolutely beautiful book about the future. It is about the future. Now, it was written and recorded in the prophecies given about the future from that point until the time that Jesus came. And so it was prophetic. Now we look back 2,000 years on the prophecy and see how it's fulfilled. But Daniel, when it was written, some 550 years before all the events were played out that are given in the book of Daniel, it is an incredible book to look at the power of God and how he sees the future. It is an amazing book. It's deep. It's detailed. I mean, the prophecies are detailed about people that then when they took place, people look back and said, wow, did that guy Daniel get it right? When he said that this was going to happen and that was going to happen. And then as history played out, they look back and, wow, what an incredible truth and prophecy that Daniel 550 years before could get it right. Again, there's other prophecies in the Old Testament, and they all point toward the coming of Christ. And there's a lot of prophecies about Jesus to come that were fulfilled. But the book of Daniel is this large prophecy about a lot of things that happened between the time of his life and the coming of Christ. Tonight we're going to look at the last vision of Daniel. I got to qualify that. It's the last vision, but there's two or three parts to it. So tonight we're going to look in chapter 11. But we're going to go back because it's been 5 weeks since we started this section. And I want to review a couple of things about the book of Daniel and where we're at in that study because I think it's important. It's important to know that this prophecy that we're going to talk about tonight in chapter 11 begins to be talked about this time period earlier in chapter 8. And in chapter 10, all the prophecies that we see in Daniel tell the story of the future, but then the next prophecy, the next vision, kind of goes back and begins to retell it with more detail and more names. And until you get to the end of Daniel, you kind of have this recurring prophetic look at the future years ahead. Well, in chapter 10, it says, in the third year of King Cyrus of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. So we know exactly when Daniel got this prophecy we're going to talk about tonight, in 538 BC. Historians agree that Cyrus became king in 539 or 538 BC. I mean, there's no really doubt about that. Persians have a great record of the history of their kings and their rulers. And so it's real easy to put a timeline with these prophecies. It's not like people are guessing, but from even secular history, you have this timeline between the time of chapter 10 and 538 and when Daniel received these prophecies and then the events that are foretold in chapter 10 and chapter 11. It would have been the third year then after Cyrus became king, and Cyrus became king because his army, the Persians, destroyed the army of the Babylonians, and Cyrus took over as king. And so it was this big shift on the world stage of world power. What was thought to be an invincible Babylonian city with walls around it and a tremendously strong army was defeated in one night, in part because of the foolishness of the king and that they did not take the threat seriously. Of course, God knew what was going to happen, and Daniel had prophesied that this would happen, but it looked on paper like it could never happen the way that it did, but it did. And Cyrus, the king of Persia, takes over the city of Babylon and in time all of the Babylonian Empire. In each of the dreams of the kings that we've seen in the book of Daniel, which began with a king named Nebuchadnezzar and a king named Belshazzar, and then the dreams of Daniel, there are these unfolding mysteries that are being laid out in the future of God's people, the Jewish people, and the kingdoms of the world that take place there. They're not all in chronological order. If you read the book of Daniel straight through, you'll be confused about this story. And, well, wait a minute, isn't that describing what happened in chapter 3? Or, wait a minute, it says the king's name is here, and then we find the king's name there, but in between a different king, and what's that about? Well, all the stories are not arranged chronologically, so you can't necessarily read it and think about it like that, not in complete order. But each one of them, when you put them in place, you put them in order, they point ahead to something that God wanted to convey to Daniel. God wanted to convey to Daniel that his hand was on his people. And though from a world perspective you have all these armies and nations and kings and rulers and laws of these different countries, God held every one of those in his hand. And he was going to eventually bring about the coming of Jesus, the coming of Messiah. God's people, the Jews. Some people note that in our Bible, if you have a Bible, probably you have a Bible that has 66 books in it, the Old Testament and the New Testament. And the Old Testament pretty much stops at this time. And there's not anything written in our Bible between the time of about 444 BC and when Jesus came. About 440 years. You have the book of Malachi, the end of the Old Testament. Malachi lived in about 440 BC, and then his short book is there, four chapters. And then there's nothing more about that time period until you get to the book of Matthew and the opening of the New Testament. So some people think, well, this is a quiet period. This is a period when we really don't know what happened and what was God doing and what did he want his people to do? Well, it's amazing how much Daniel says about God's hand on the people during that 444 years. Because this vision that we find in chapter 11 is about those 444 years. And it does actually say a lot about what's going on with God's people. How they're impacted by these kingdoms of the world. In our Bibles, we don't have much information about this interim time. But Daniel gives us surely some amazing views about the future and what we're going to see there. In Daniel chapter 10, verse 14, the angel tells Daniel why he's given him this amazing dream. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time to come. That's pretty clear. The angel says, Daniel, I've come and I want to explain something to you. The reason I'm explaining this is I want you to see what's going to happen to God's people during this time. I want you to see how their lives are going to be impacted. You may think, other people might wonder, has God even remembered his people? The answer is yes. And so I'm going to show you some things. And what he shows Daniel, we read last time, it causes Daniel great fear. Concern because he sees what's going to happen. Some of it is not good. Some of it is horrible that God's people are going to face. But he also sees how God is working and moving in those generations, in those hundreds of years, in those kings, in those dynasties. Daniel chapter 10 is a retelling of his vision from chapter 8, but with more detail and more clarity. If you remember back to chapter 8, and I don't expect you to, and if you weren't here anyway, you know that won't mean anything other than for me to describe quickly. In Daniel chapter 8, Daniel had an earlier dream, and the dream of all things was about a ram and a goat. Like, wow, what was he, a ram and a goat? What would that have to do with the world and the future and the nations? Well, we're told exactly what the ram and the goat is. The Persian Empire is the ram. And the Greek Empire, Alexander the Great, is represented by the goat. And the goat is going to kill the ram. Back in chapter 8, we're told that. So, wow, we have a little information. We know that the two animals represent these two world kingdoms, one of which is going to conquer the other. Remember, this comes some 200 years before the event takes place. Daniel gives this prophecy 200 years before the ram is destroyed by this horned goat. Look again at chapter 8, verse 20. Did I miss it? Yeah, the two-horned ram that you saw represents the kings of Media and Persia. The shaggy goat is the king of Greece. People that think that the Bible is not specific about the future need to read the book of Daniel, because it is very specific. And here, it is very clear that God is saying, I'm giving you this picture of the next 400 years. The kingdom of the Persians is going to last about 210 years from the point he had the dream. And then the Greek Empire, that's going to lead up into the days of the Roman Empire and then the coming of Jesus. So chapter 8 really sets the story that we're going to read in chapter 11 in this case. They're also in this story, and we looked I missed something there. In the last chapter, we had the reference to the prince of Greece and the prince of Persia. Another element to it. Another element of something going on in world history that man doesn't quite have his finger on, but it's in the spiritual realms. In other words, all of human history fits into the spiritual hand of God and the planning of God. Somehow God has a plan on this mighty kingdom, on this mighty ram, and this mighty goat. And there are spiritual forces that are at work. In fact, and we read in chapter 10 about the presence of this powerful angel that you've probably heard of before. His name is Michael, and he's described in other places in the Bible, including in the book of Revelation at the end of time, when Michael will be one of the strongest angels who will bring about the events that will take place at the end of times in the book of Revelation. So now we come to chapter 11, which is the end of the ram. Daniel's going to describe in two verses the end of the ram, the end of the Persian Empire. It's coming to an end. The end of the kingdom. The end of the second of four kingdoms that is described in his dreams. The first one is Babylon. The second one is Persia. Persia is the ram. And verses 1 and 2 describe the end of that. And then, from then on in chapter 11, verse 3 through the end, which is another 38 verses or so, is the emergence of the shaggy goat, the Greek Empire, and the forces that will take place there. Let me read that. If you want to read along in your Bibles, chapter 11 of Daniel here, I'm going to read two verses right here. This is the end of the Persian Empire. And in the first year of Darius the Mede, I took my stand to support and protect him. Now then, I tell you the truth. Three more kings will appear in Persia, and then a fourth, who will be far richer than all the others. When he has gained power by his wealth, he will stir up everyone against the kingdom of Greece. Interesting. Two verses that Daniel says that now in the future, in the immediate future, there's going to be four more kings. They will be Persian. And the fourth king will be stronger than the first three and will be very rich. And he will have gained a massive fortune. And then he'll be conquered and destroyed. So two verses describe the end of the ram, the end of this time of the ram. Now, I want to look at some dates and some names just to kind of tie together this time period that we're talking about. 538 is when Daniel records the prophecy. It'll be 208 years until the first two verses are fulfilled and the end of the Persian Empire. So Daniel's going to be dead for 200 years before this is fulfilled. It's not like God says, Daniel, this is what's going to happen. You're going to see it happen. No. By now, Daniel's thought to be 70 to 80 years old, and he's thought to have died in the next 10 years. There's no references to him after about 8 years from now. So he's probably dead by about 530 or so B.C. So he's writing the prophecies, and what we're going to read in a little bit is about, well, what we just read now about the first 200 years, which is kind of represented here, and then we move to the shaggy goat in the rest of chapter 11. These are the rulers, the kings of Persia during this time period. This comes from secular history. Some of these names, in fact, about half of these names are found in Daniel and the books of Esther, Ezra, and Nehemiah. Not all of them. Some of them don't seem to intersect those stories, but some of them do. For example, Cyrus does, the first one. He ruled for 40 years, actually. So his story is found in the book of Daniel, and his name is mentioned. Darius is mentioned in the book of Daniel. Cambyses and Smerdis are not. And then another Darius is mentioned. And Xerxes is mentioned later in the column on the right, and Artaxerxes. There were four of them, consecutive kings of Persia, that Artaxerxes 1, Artaxerxes 2, 3, and 4. So there are a total of about 9 or 10 Persian rulers during this time period. Daniel talks about four of them. He says there are four, and at the end of that time, that will be the end of the Persian dynasty. Now, also, the three books that you see on the right, the books of Esther, Ezra, and Nehemiah, they are three Old Testament books. Those are all also a part of this story. They're a part of the story of what happens in the next 200 years. And especially, importantly, what happens to the people of Israel, the Jewish people. That is the topic of this vision, is what's going to happen to God's people. They're in captivity. And so Daniel talks about the next 200 years, and these three books tells us of important events that happen to the Israel Jewish people that are in captivity. And the main thing is that God is going to restore them back to Jerusalem and Israel through a process of events. They don't all happen in the same year. They happen really over a span of about 120 years that God begins to allow the Jewish people who are in captivity to go back to Jerusalem. It begins in the reign of Cyrus in about 532 B.C. He allows some of the people to go back. They begin to rebuild. And then later on, he allows more people to go back. And then Darius allows some to go back. And then you have the story of Esther that has one of the kings, Artaxerxes, was the king when Esther came into power. And that story is told in the book of Esther, and how God allowed the turning back of discrimination and worse against the Jewish people through the life of Esther. And then about 20 years or so later, you have Ezra come along, and Ezra petitions the Persian king that he could go back and encourage the people to rebuild the temple and rebuild their city and obey the Lord. And then in 444, a few years later, Nehemiah knows, he hears reports that back in Jerusalem, the people have gone back, but yet the wall is in disrepair and the enemies around Israel are coming in and not allowing them to plant crops and to rebuild their city. And so the king gives permission for Nehemiah to go back and reinforce the wall. You have this process of rebuilding. Again, God's giving Daniel this look so he knows what's going to happen to the people ahead. And so Daniel is seeing in the future, past his life. He is seeing it, those two verses, up till about 330 B.C., when Persia and all these rulers and this whole story will come to an end, and there will be a new kingdom that will come to power. Persia ruled again until 208 years. Some of them also are named in the Old Testament books. Okay, now I want to move on to what happens after Persia is destroyed. That really begins chapter verse 3 of chapter 11. Not going to read all of it because it is one thing. There's a lot of descriptions of kingdoms and warriors and battles, and it's just a lot to read and think about. Let me read a little bit of it. Verse 3 says, "Then a mighty king will appear who will rule with great power and do as he pleases. After he has appeared, his empire will be broken up and parceled out toward the four winds of heaven. It will not go to his descendants, nor will it have the power he exercised, because his empire will be uprooted and given to others. The king of the south will become strong, but one of his commanders will become even stronger than he and will rule his own kingdom with great power. After some years, they will become allies. The daughter of the king of the south will go to the king of the north to make an alliance, but she will not retain her power, and he and his power will not last. In those days, she will be handed over, together with her royal escort and her father and the one who supported her. One from her family line will arise to take her place. He will attack the forces of the king of the north and enter his fortress. He will fight against them and be victorious." Boy, there's a lot there. If I kept reading, you'd probably be going, wow, what is all this? This is a description of what happened when the Persian Empire fell and what happened after that. And it begins with this description in verse 3 of a mighty king. This mighty king is Alexander the Great. Again, how do we know that that matches up? It matches up exactly to secular history. In 323 B.C., Alexander the Great conquered the Persian Empire. And Daniel, way back in his first dream, and Nebuchadnezzar's dream before that, had dreamed about this kingdom that was going to come, the kingdom of the goat. It was the kingdom of Greece. And the goat itself is represented by this amazingly powerful king, this powerful warrior. And he would be so powerful that he would conquer the earth. That's what the dreams were about. In chapter 3 of 11 is the description of that happening. Alexander the Great. If you know much about his story, he's called one of the greatest human conquerors of human history. When you look at the places that he conquered within a few years, it's absolutely amazing. He conquered basically most of the known world at the time within a very short amount of time. But I also realize when I read about Alexander the Great in human history, but I read about it in the Bible, there's two different ways it's described. You read about Alexander the Great, put it in your computer, pull it up. You'll read stories of amazing conquest and power and all that this man possessed. And you come to chapter 11, verse 3, and his whole life is summarized in one verse, one place. That's what Alexander the Great gets in the Bible, one verse. How life is fleeting, how things that seem so great in man's eyes, how it is in God's eyes, how Alexander the Great fit into the amazing plan of God. If you go and you study his life, he had an incredible but short life. But how it fits into Daniel's prophecy is absolutely incredible. If you want to say, well, where in the Bible did, before it happened, did somebody write that something was going to happen? This is it. This is one of those places. Chapter 11, verse 3, this description of Alexander the Great. It fits so perfectly into history and into time. It's really incredible. Well, Alexander the Great, who was he? Well, he conquered the Persian Empire. We know that. That's not all that he conquered, but he started out as a local king in Greece, in Macedon, or what we think of as Macedonia. His father, Philip, had become king about 30 years earlier. He had conquered the small kingdom, kind of a one small kingdom inside of all of Greece. So his father had been a king and a conqueror, but of a pretty small area, and he was killed. He was assassinated. So his son, Alexander, who is, I believe, 19 years old at the time, he was 19 or 21, I read two different dates, he became the king of the Macedons. And very quickly, he began to build an army. And he had within him this desire to conquer. And so, 4 years after he became king in 336 This is the total amount of time that he ruled over the whole empire, 332 to 323. So it wasn't very long. But he before he conquered the Persian Empire in 332 B.C., Alexander the Great took his army south from Greece, kind of down through what we think of Syria and Israel and that area, and went into Babylon, and he conquered Babylon first. And so he first conquered the smaller kingdom of Babylon, and that was an amazing accomplishment. He did it in 2 years. And after he did that, and he organized, and then he took his army back up north through Israel, and then he decided to go east. And so he went into the Persian Empire, and everywhere he went, he conquered quickly. He went all the way to India, conquering. And so he conquered all this area in a very short amount of time. He went all the way to India in 334. And then he went back, and he decided that he was going to make Babylon kind of the capital of the new empire, the capital of the Greek Empire, with him as so he went back to Babylon, and just a little bit later, after all this conquering, he was in Babylon, and according to the story, he told his people he was feeling sick. He went to bed, he had a fever, and for 10 days he was sick, and after 10 days he died at the age of 33. So here's this man that accomplished all this in a short amount of time. He was just regarded, and is certainly by history regarded, as the greatest, probably the greatest conqueror of the world, at least at the time. And at the age of 33, he succumbs to some kind of sickness. Might have been malaria, might have been typhoid fever. Of course, there's conspiracy theories that he was poisoned, and some evidence of that. But whatever the case, at the age of 33, here Alexander the Great, this man, you've heard his name, I'm sure, is gone. 33 years old. And Daniel chapter 11 gives one verse to his life again. Then a mighty king will appear who will rule with great power and do as he pleases. And then he's gone. Alexander the Great. Well, after he died, there was this struggle to what to do with his empire. He was an incredible leader, apparently. And when he died, the empire fell apart. The strength of his leadership and his relationships, his kingdom, basically the generals that were in Babylon didn't know what to do. And so what they decided to do, there were basically four generals, and they decided to carve up the kingdom, and each of them would take one of those areas of the kingdom, and they would become the rulers of that. And that's exactly what happened. And so you have the carving up of this large empire at the time, and very only 10 years after Alexander started. I want to see if I can use this button here. Yeah, I don't know if you can see this very much at all. I know you can't see the words, but I just want to bring attention to some of the things there. That kind of the yellow thing right there, that is the largest piece that was carved up. And it was claimed by one of the generals. And he was a general that was from the area that we call Syria, which was a part of the land, but he was a strong general. Much of the army came from that area that ruled. He was a Seleucid, it's called the Seleucid Empire. And so he was the strongest of the generals, and he took most of the land. And then to the south here, you have Egypt, the kingdom of Egypt. It also was fairly strong. And the general that was second strongest, now I'm kind of paraphrasing it, took that area and claimed it to be the king of that area. And then you have two more areas. Up here you have Macedon, which is what his father had conquered. It was pretty small, but one of the generals wanted to go back home, if you would. And then the other one was called Pergama, and it's a little bit larger, but these two pieces were the small pieces Egypt was the big piece, and then this, what's called the Seleucid Empire, was the extremely big piece and the strongest. Everything we read now, the rest of the chapters in Daniel, is about this and about that. These two didn't last. They were cut up and beat up and civil war, and so they really, they're not even a factor in the rest of the book of Daniel, but these two are. In fact, everything we find, the rest of the book of Daniel is about what goes on between these two empires. And the rest of chapter 11 are about these two things that go on. So when you think of Egypt and you think of Syria or Seleucid, those are the two kingdoms now that Daniel's going to talk about. He describes them in these terms, the kings of the north and the kings of the south. The kings of the north, Daniel is describing that yellow area, the Seleucid Empire, and the king of the south is Egypt. And the rest of the book of Daniel, although chapter 11 doesn't go to 31 BC, it goes to 167 BC, and we'll tell you why in a minute, but the rest of this story is about this time period, the kings of the north and the south, because from now on until 31 BC, when the Romans get a hold and defeat and destroy what's left of the king of the north and the king of the south, and the Romans take over, that's when you have a transition to another kingdom, the last kingdom that Daniel describes, the kingdom of Rome. So you have these two kingdoms, the king of the north, the Seleucids, the king of the south, the Ptolemies, two families, two strong generals whose children, whose sons and grandsons and great-grandsons for many years are the rulers of these two kingdoms. They're the two, as I described earlier, the strongest Greek factions. Now, what do we know about the king of the north and the king of the south? They will be constantly at war for 300 years. There will be war, after skirmish between these two generals and their families, their descendants, basically. And the problem is, Israel is right in the middle between them. They are on the road between these two empires. Let me jump back here if I could. Where's Israel? It is right here. How do you get to Egypt from the north through Israel? How do you get out of Egypt and go to conquer another world through Israel? So literally, they are in the middle. Israel is and will be for the next 300 years of these two warring nations that are always in the middle. These two empires are described now all through the rest of the chapter 11. The king of the south will march out in a rage and fight against the king of the north, and the army's carried off. But then later, the king of the north will rise up and muster an army larger than the first, and after several years, he will advance with a huge army fully equipped. That means that they go back up through Israel in order to try to conquer the other one, the army of the north or the south. And Israel, for the next 300 years, will be in the middle of this. I mean, every 3 years, one of the two armies is coming through Israel. And Israel is constantly controlled by and beat up by and trying to be controlled by these armies. They're trying to be their own people, have their own government, have their own identity, but during this time period, it's almost impossible to do so. So you have in these two great countries, or these two great parts of the kingdom, these factions and families that until finally in 31 BC, Rome comes and takes advantage of the weakness of both the north and the south, because they have beat each other up till neither of them had hardly any army left. And then Rome comes in and conquers them both. And then Rome becomes the conqueror of the world. Why? Because these two beat each other up so much, they become weaker, and Rome then conquers all the world in 31 BC, 31 or so years before Jesus comes. And that's another story. Okay, one more slide about some names. The king of the north is represented by this, the right side of the screen, the Greek-Syrian uh, uh, Greek leaders called the Seleucid Empire. And you saw how big it was. I just said Middle East, but you have two names that are a part of this kingdom. One is Seleucus, who was the family name of the original general and his descendants, and then giving way to another name that would become the dominant name of Antiochus. Now, if you know much about history during this time, Antiochus is such an important name because it leads right into an event that takes place in 167 BC called the Maccabean Revolt. And it was a revolt against this empire. It was a revolt against the desecration of the temple and all that went with that. Well, Antiochus is the Greek general from Syria that brings about the events that take place when Israel finally in 167 BC says, we've had enough of this, the north and the south and us in the middle. And they rise up against the Syrians and they kick them out finally. And they'll have autonomy until the Romans finally come in. On the left is the Egyptian side of it, the Egyptian army and family, but the Ptolemy family. And there's another family that's a part of names that you've heard is Cleopatra. Cleopatra, I didn't really realize until I studied this. I thought Cleopatra was one female, you know, who got tied up with the Romans, Mark Antony and all that, you know. But actually, Cleopatra is a family name that goes back to this time period of this 200 years. And Cleopatra's and Ptolemy's together ruled the Egyptians. And that also leads into this story that I mentioned about the Maccabean revolt. So Daniel's vision in chapter 11 takes us up through these two kingdoms. And I'm not taking time to go into the specifics of what happened, but just kind of describe it generally. But it takes us up to the time of a man named Antiochus the IV and the temple desecration in 159 B.C. You've probably heard the term before, the Maccabean Revolt. If you've studied Jewish history, you know that this particular 10-year period or 8-year period, whatever it was, is so important to Jewish history. It's important to understand what happened in the Maccabean Revolt and understand in part the setting of Jesus coming and the Romans and the significance of how the Israelites felt about the occupation of the Romans. Well, going back to this event in 167 BC, which is the end of chapter 11, Daniel brings us to that place at the end of chapter 11. And then chapter 12 describes a time period that takes place later. Well, what I want to do is stop tonight. And next week, I'd like to tell the story of the Maccabean Revolt. It really is an amazing story of survival. It's an amazing story of how God's people had been abused. The temple had been desecrated. I mean, Antiochus brought in hogs and swine and sacrificed them on the altar of the Jewish temple. You just can imagine how offensive that was to the Jewish. I mean, he did it in order just to tell the Jewish people they were worth nothing. And they put up with that for a long time. And then finally, in 167, there was a man named Judith Maccabees who said, we've had enough. And so he began to stand up, and he and two of his sons attacked some of the Antiochus massive army and had a victory, and they went into hiding, and then they gathered some other people around them, and they began to stand up to Antiochus and to this horrible stuff that was going on. And over the course of 8 years, they were able to bring about a total change in Israel. But it's a neat story, and I'm planning next Sunday night, Lord willing, to tell the story of the Maccabeans and then how that leads into the time period of Jesus coming. From the Maccabeans to Jesus coming is 160 years, and that too is such an important historical time that Daniel writes about in chapter 12. Okay? Thanks for being here. I don't know if you enjoy history like I do, but I love history, and this is history. this is history. This, if you want to see what prophecy is and how God gives to certain people ahead of time what happens, this book will increase your faith. You'll say, wow, I never realized that there were so many things written in the Bible that came true 500 years later. This book is one of them, and it's a neat one. Thanks for being here tonight. Hope you have a good week.